Prologue. Time is the warp of the tapestry which is life. It is eternal, constant, unchanging. But the wolf is gathered together from the four corners of the earth and the 28 seas and out of the air and the minds of men by that master artist, Fate, as she weaves the design that is never finished. A thread from here, a thread from there, another from out of the past that has waited years for the companion thread, without which the picture must be incomplete. But fate is patient. She waits 100 or 1,000 years to bring together 2 strands of thread whose union is essential to the fabrication of her tapestry, to the composition of the design that was without beginning and is without end. A matter of some 1,865 years ago, scholars do not agree as to the exact year, Paul of Tarsus suffered martyrdom at Rome. That a tragedy so remote could seriously affect the lives and destinies of an English aviatrix and an American professor of geology, neither of whom was conscious of the existence of the other at the time this narrative begins. When it does begin, which is not yet, since Paul of Tarsus is merely by way of prologue, may seem remarkable to us, but not to fate, who has been patiently waiting these nearly 2,000 years for the very events I am about to chronicle. But there is a link between Paul and these 2 young people. It is Angustus the Ephesian. Angustus was a young man of moods and epilepsy, a nephew of the house of Onesiphorus. Numbered was he among the early converts to the new faith when Paul of Tarsus first visited the ancient Ionian city of Ephesus. Inclined to fanaticism from early childhood and epileptic, and worshiping the apostle as the representative of the master on earth, it is not strange that news of the martyrdom of Paul should have so affected Angustus as to seriously imperil his mental balance. Conjuring delusions of persecution, he fled Ephesus, taking ship for Alexandria, and here we might leave him, wrapped in his robe, huddled, sick, and frightened, on the deck of the little vessel, were it not for the fact that at the island of Rhodes, where the ship touched, Angustus, going ashore, acquired in some manner, whether by conversion or purchase we know not, a fair-haired slave girl from some far northern barbarian tribe. And here we bid Angustus and the days of the Caesars adieu. And not without some regrets upon my part, for I can well imagine adventure, if not romance, in the flight of Angustus and the fair-haired slave girl down into Africa from the storied port of Alexandria through Memphis and Thebes into the great unknown. Chapter 1. Gathering the Threads. As far as I know, the first Earl of Whimsey has nothing to do with this story, and so we are not particularly interested in the fact that it was not so much the fine grade of whiskey that he manufactured that won him his earldom as the generous contribution he made to the Liberal Party at the time that it was in power a number of years ago. Being merely a simple historian and no prophet, I cannot say whether we shall see the Earl of Whimsey again or not, but if we do not find the Earl particularly interesting, I can assure you that the same may not be said of his fair daughter, Lady Barbara Collis. The African sun, still an hour high, was hidden from the face of the earth by solid cloud banks that enveloped the loftier peaks of the mysterious, impenetrable fastnesses of the forbidding Genzi mountain range that frowned perpetually upon 1,000 valleys little known to man. From far above this seeming solitude, out of the heart of the densely banked clouds, there came to whatever ears there might be, to hear a strange and terrifying droning, suggesting the presence of a preposterous gargantuan bumblebee circling far above the